Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome again to the ICADS Task Force meeting. Cheryl Turney cannot be with us today, but we have our other co-chair, Alex Goss. In addition to that, I see we have Neil Jane, Denise Webb, Jim Jurgis, Mary Green, Rich Landon, and Sasha Terma. Are there any other task force members that are on the phone?
Jackie Munson is on.
Hi, Jackie. Anyone else?
Gus Taurasi.
Hi, Gus. Anyone else?
Deb Strickland just chatted in the box that she's here, and I think I just talked over Steve Brown. My apologies.
Deb and Steve. Okay, great. Okay, with that, we're all set, and I'll turn it over to you, Alex.
Well, thanks so very much. So welcome, everyone. My name is Alex Goss, and I'm going to be your moderator today. And to kick us off, after we do a little bit of level setting on just kind of orienting us from last week's call to this week's call, I'll be turning it over to Jim, as he'll be doing a walkthrough, I believe, with Josh on the data classes wrap-up. That will then lead us into a prior authorization recommendation brainstorming effort. We're going to continue some work from last week, and we have some good jump-off points thanks to the small work group efforts of last week, last Friday, and then we'll have a public comment before wrapping up with next steps. So with that said, let's go one more slide. At our last meeting, we had a presentation from Hans, the overview of the Electronic Health Record Association presentation. Noted this gave us the perspective of the electronic health record vendors in the mix of the prior authorization conversation and presentations we've been having from industry. It was good to hear from them. They set us up with some framework around maturity levels, such as the pharmacy electronic prior authorization and real-time benefit check really being much more progressive in prior authorization than we're seeing in the medical side of the house. Spoke to us a lot about the payer variability of when data is needed and what data is then needed in the process of prior authorization. Led us into some very robust interaction among the Q&A, which was really great to extend our thinking, building upon a lot of the earlier things we've heard from other presenters from the industry. And following that robust discussion, we started brainstorming with the full task force around the prior authorization recommendations. You may recall that we've done prior work with guiding principles and ideal state to keep the thread moving forward towards our recommendations. We're using the one master document for all of those pieces of the puzzle. And we are continuing to leverage this interplay between task force discussions building on the small working group efforts. And what I'm hoping that is today, we can bring home the last remaining portions of that brainstorming effort that'll really help us have the remaining pieces of the puzzle for the report. So it was a really good discussion last week around recommendations. And so we've been capturing that in the working document. And so that's available. I encourage all members to be reviewing that. So without any further ado, I think we're going to go ahead and pivot unless there's any questions on that wrap-up. At this point, I think Jim and Josh, are you guys ready to go at this point?
Yes, yes, we are.
Awesome.
All right. I'm going to tee it up a bit, but as you recall, we all first started by looking at workflows and realized, wow, that's really complicated. It's really all about the data, and it's about standards and how what we recommend appropriately as an ONC, as a high-tech group that can make recommendations to ONC for how to actually reduce inefficiencies and costs, reduce provider burden, increase interoperability around clinical administrative data. In this case, specifically the prior auth use case, which we all know creates so much burden. And so this is a culmination of multiple weeks, and what Josh is going to walk through is the legend. And then what we think the key data classes are a little description of it, and then what we think the content standards, what's the status of what's out there. Josh, you want to go ahead and take away?
Yeah, thank you. So, as Dr. Jurgis said, this is really to close the loop on all the input we've received. And so I do just want to take a minute to say thank you to everyone who has contributed to this. I know Jocelyn and Rom have both been very instrumental in getting in the weeds with me on this and helping to form kind of the basis for the look and feel and make sure we're capturing everything on a page to help support the eventual recommendations of the task force. But in addition to that, many of you have weighed in, whether it's through our various task force calls or email after the call or, you know, follow-up conversations, and we really appreciate all the engagement and effort on behalf of the group to help drive this and make sure we have a clean vision of what's out there today that can help drive our recommendations. So just to orient everybody a bit, at the top you'll see a legend. So we described all of these different content standards, both in terms of their capability as well as their relative adoption rate across the industry today. So in terms of capability, when you see a blank space, like for instance under X12 in the first line, there's a couple of blanks. What this means is that there's not a particular utilization of that transaction or standard when it comes to the specific data class that's referenced. We also have categories for proprietary standards. So this would be it's kind of the best word that we came up with to describe this, but more along the lines of one-off solutions that are being developed in the industry today to meet a specific need. They're not a standard per se, but something where there has been industry-driven efforts to close a gap. You'll also see the terms emerging, available, and in use. And what we tried to do here was capture the delineation between there being a standard that is, in existence of some kind that may be very early on in the adoption curve, so we categorize that as an emerging standard. Available would speak more to the fact that a particular standard has been developed and deployed fully, but may not be utilized as heavily as some others out there. And then in use is really the one that describes the standards that are have essentially been fully deployed or are saturated in the sense that they are in practical use today and have proven real world usefulness. Then when it comes to the color coding, when you see a blank, so probably the best example of this would be in the HL7 CCDA and version 2 columns, you'll notice that these are classified as in use, but then they are not filled in with a color. And the methodology behind that is that these standards do carry the data described in the data classes on the left-hand side of this depiction, but their usefulness and their use in terms of practical real-world use is less clear. So some organizations may be using it, but it's not, I guess the best way to say it would be these aren't necessarily purpose-built standards for prior auth. You'll notice there is another mention of proprietary in the color coding, and that's mainly to accommodate this real-time pharmacy benefits tool area where there is an emerging standard that's being built on an existing industry proprietary standard. And then we move into the draft standards, where the best example would be in the FHIR space with the DaVinci implementation guides, where all these have been classified as emerging standards and they're in draft today. The last three are the ones that are really in practical use in some to some extent. And what we used as a basis for categorizing these as low, medium, or high adoption rates are the information we were able to get from ONC's Interoperability Standards Advisory, or ISA. So they use a 5-star ranking mechanism for evaluating the adoption levels of each standard. So we tried to align with that as best we can. For things that were on the 1-star end of the spectrum, we've categorized it as low. 5-star end of the spectrum has been categorized as high. And then everything kind of in the middle has been categorized as medium. So I believe when we did our review, everything cleanly fit into a 1-star, 3-star, or 5-star bucket. So there's not like a 4-star that we had to figure out where to put it. That made our analysis a little more clean. So in terms of the rest of the document, so on the on the left-hand side, we've got our data classes described succinctly with a name, and then a more lengthy description of what constitutes that particular data class. We'll walk through each of these in a little bit more detail and talk about our evaluation line by line. On the right-hand side, you'll see the standards we evaluated. So these were the X12 standards, the NCPDP standards for the pharmacy side of the house, the fire implementation guides that DaVinci has developed to date that have a applicability in the prior auth space, and then, as I mentioned before, HL7 CCDA and V2 were included, mostly with the idea being we wanted to be comprehensive and making sure we were evaluating anything that was in use today. So when it comes to X12, these are broken out into the three major transaction types that are used in the prior auth space. So you'll see that certain transaction types are more purpose-built for satisfying pieces of the equation, and while others satisfy the other parts of the equation. And then moving down the line, depending on the nature of the standard, they may be broken up a little bit differently. For fire, for instance, there's the three different implementation guides we reviewed. Okay, so I think that's it in terms of orientation. I'll start going through line by line and talking through our findings for each data class. So starting with patient identity, this is really just the minimum necessary data that organizations need in order to ensure that the patient they are talking about is the patient that should be discussed in the context of a payer and provider relationship. So what we identified here was the fact that each of the standards in its own way does capture some of the data in this data class that we would envision in this data class. As you can see, it's a little bit different for X12. It has a purpose-built transaction versus the DaVinci implementation guides, which each of the implementation guides addresses that particular one in its own way. But again, across the board, there's varying levels of adoption that you can see based on the color coding that I described before. For patient demographics, so this is the basic demographic information that may be necessary for use throughout the prior auth process. Again, each of the standards does address this in some capacity with varying degrees of adoption. Moving on to the insurance plan data class. This is the information that's required for a provider to know which payer and which plan is in play for a specific patient. And so you'll notice that we also describe the primary, secondary, and tertiary I plans that may be necessary for a patient. So a lot of that is based on input from the task force talking about the fact that there may be more than one payer that a patient has, that, you know, if we go through the prior auth process for one particular payer, there may be a need to, in the case of a denial, resort to doing that same process for a secondary insurance plan. So again, all the different standards that are out there today capture this with varying degrees of adoption. On the patient benefits transparency line, so this is where we get into coverage details specific to the patient. This is kind of the initial bare bones necessary information to understand what a patient's coverage is under a particular plan. And again, it's addressed by each of the standards in some capacity. The next line item is getting into some of our more tricky ones where not everything is covered by a particular standard. So we've discussed as a group the notion that a patient may have input that's necessary for the prior auth process to work efficiently. And so what we found is that this is really a key gap area where none of the standards are really particularly addressing this use case. So you can see how that might help drive some of the eventual recommendations of the task force as an example where there may be a gap today. The next series of data classes are all kind of associated with the actual prior auth process itself. So I'll talk about them a little bit all together and then go back through them one at a time. So from a flow perspective, this is kind of a linear depiction, so, if you were to map it out. So initially there is a request for a prior auth that's generated by a provider and submitted to a payer, at which point it becomes necessary for the payer to reveal the rules and the data requirements in order for that prior auth to be successfully processed. The prior auth justification data class is then that data class which would allow a provider to submit all the necessary documentation to drive the approval of a prior auth. The next data class was this notion of a follow-up. So that would be in the event that a payer received the justification for the prior auth, but deemed the information provided to be insufficient in some capacity. It could then be circled back to the provider to fill in the gaps as necessary. And then the determination data class is where there is actually an approval or a denial that's being communicated by the payer back to the provider. The last two are a little bit more, they're not quite as part of the process that we've described before. So in the appeal data class, what we're talking about here is being able to efficiently escalate a denial through the appeal process in the event a provider believes that it was inappropriately denied. And then the PA status data class is kind of a metadata data class that this is trying to address the notion that we've discussed as a group, where there's a need for insight for all the different constituents in the process, payer, provider, patient, to be able to understand exactly where a prior auth request is in the process so that there's clear communication between all those constituents and transparent information about the status. So going back through everything in a little more detail, so I think what we'll find is the pieces of the prior auth process going from request to that determination of approval or denial are all covered in some capacity by the different standards. So the differences lie in the differences in or the variation in adoption. And of course, DaVinci is the prior auth support implementation guide is still considered to be an emerging standard, draft standard. Where there gets to be a little bit of a clearer depiction of maybe where some gaps are that could be addressed is when we get down to the appeal and status components. So for the appeal process, really there seems to be a lot of opportunities for both X12 and DaVinci to help address the problem of efficiently escalating appeals. On the status, that's another one where there really isn't a clear notion of status for any of these. So in terms of recommendations, you can see how the need for that information to be transparent to all the constituents, how that might drive a recommendation from the task force as well. And then the last two I'll wrap up with here. So a fairly recent addition that I'm not sure we've discussed as a larger group is this service completion. So what we're trying to address here is the idea that ultimately the goal of the prior auth process is to provide what is necessary for the patient's care and also ensure appropriate and timely payment for the service provided. So what we wanted to do is depict that as part of the prior auth equation, because ultimately some of the pain points lie in the fact that a provider could actually get an approval of a prior auth and then have a difficult time in actually getting payment for that service. So that would be the need for there to be a common terminology for an approval that could be relied upon when it comes to payment as well, something that carries all the way through the process. And as you can see, this is something that isn't clearly addressed in any of the standards out there today. And then lastly, the concept of metadata. So in particular, the main crux of this class was around information required for the different systems that are required for prior auth communication to interoperate with one another. So probably the best example of this would be the endpoints required to actually send the data back and forth between the different constituents. So again, I think this is an area where largely one-off solutions being deployed. One note is that when it comes to FHIR, there have been some discussions as part of the FAST initiative to help build out what a standard for that kind of data might look like. So that wraps up my quick high-level walkthrough through the document. You may notice that since we talked about this last, this has been reformatted a little bit to be in a Word document. So the idea behind that was to use this as supplementary material to go along with the recommendations of the task force that could be cited throughout. So that's part of the idea behind the reformatting. The other idea is just to really come to a place where a finalization on these. So a big part of why we wanted to come back today and present the work that's been done is to kind of officially close this out and entertain any final questions there might be around the format and the exercise that was completed. So I think I was able to walk through this quick enough to be able to entertain some questions, though I will note I'm not sure that I heard Jocelyn or Rom as part of the roll call, so you may be unfortunately just relying on me and Dr. Georgia to help field your questions, but we would certainly be happy to do that at this point.
Well, you'll be happy to hear that Jocelyn has joined the call since you started all of this. So thank you for that most excellent walkthrough, very nicely summarized and painted a picture. I think we also had sent out this document for a working draft for members to take a look at as well. So what I'd like to do, Josh, is help facilitate questions that you may receive from our membership. So I'm going to start with Jocelyn, who's already in the queue.
So first, I want to say Josh did a great job with that, and it has been a very interactive discussion and lively debate trying to figure out how to represent this. It is a draft, and I think that we want everybody's eyeballs on it. I was receiving some texts while we were talking, Josh, and I didn't realize when we added appeal, we actually didn't, not appeal, status as its own category. We should go ahead and flag that status is actually available with X12. So we should put that in as available under X12 for the status box. This looks great. I haven't seen this version of it.
Thank you, Jocelyn. I think I also saw that, so just to clarify, you're referring to the 278 having the status? Is that what you're referring to? Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yep. So it would be under the 278 box that would need to be color-coded correspondingly. Thank you for... Okay, so I also think I saw... some other folks. Rich, I think you might have typed something in the chat box. Did you have a comment or an edit, something in addition? He can't unmute. Okay, so let me go back. I'll scroll up, Rich, and I think you said something about in the PA justification box, you'd like to see test results added.
Yep, I am adding that right now. I think that is a good call out. It's hard to be comprehensive with these examples, but I think that's definitely a good one to add.
Agreed.
Awesome. He's agreeing and thanks you for that. So, okay. So I noted in the discussion that, you know, this is really a wrap up and that this is a really great representation of the work that we've done over the last couple of months. And it's great to, for all of us to be thinking about the inclusion of our analyses in the reports that we're going to be generating. And so I know we've been working on recommendations brainstorming, but that's been really around the guiding principles and future ideal state. I'm wondering if there were, during your discussions, if you've identified some other recommendations that maybe we need to be pulling into the master document to reflect the opportunities that you guys sort of naturally talked through related to gaps like patient-generated, appeals, service completion.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that we need to make sure we're liaising with you guys on the brainstorming exercise for the recommendations. I think the patient-generated example is a pretty good one that, you know, I think as a group, it probably makes sense to decide what might the recommendation be there, you know, what's our span of influence, so to say. So, you know, clearly Da Vinci is an emerging standard where there may be some opportunity to try to factor that into some upcoming work there. I'm less clear on maybe what the recommendations might be related to other standards, and Jocelyn may have input as well on both of those points. But I think,
well, hey, Josh.
In my mind, yep, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, just being new to the committee, in past programs, when there have been gaps like this, what has the recommendation been? Has it been to build out on a standard that you could build it upon that already exists, or has it been to recommend that ONC address and facilitate standard development in that area? And what are our choices, I guess, and what's been done before when we've encountered?
I see Jocelyn's hands up, and I also know that our upcoming discussion today may also help provide some commentary around this. But Jocelyn, go ahead.
Yeah, I think our main goal here was to really be able to identify what the current state was and where. I think if you think about our entire conversation for the last 2 months, it's really been about, it's more than just the 278 submission, right, that we're focused on. We're trying to show all of the steps that somebody needs to take to get somebody on therapy or to get med-surg approved or to get a DME delivered. And so I think being able to show the panoply of standards that are in use today and show that none of them particularly do all the things I think is really the goal for this picture at this point in time. I think what the question I think we need to ask ourselves as we go to recommendations is, should we be making recommendations for ONC or CMS to identify or to recommend or to move forward in filling those gaps? Or do we think that there's a blend of options across these standard capabilities that we should be recommending and allow the industry to fill the gap with the existing standards that are in place to be able to sew them together? I think that's what we'll get to argue about for the next month.
I think I'm also, as we're talking, making a note that on our recommendations work, I think we do need to go back and revisit to tease out the clear recommendations. Okay. Are there other questions from the members? Not seeing any hands up. Not seeing that Andy or Rich, who are seeming to be more able to chat today, nothing coming through the chat box. Okay, so Andy, thank you for letting me know you're good. So from sort of a writing perspective, I think that, you know, there's a lot of parallel efforts going on. Cheryl and I have been actively working on building out an approach to crafting the report, recruiting teammates to help us with translating or transforming the work of the task force to date into some cleaner content that could go in a report structure. So I'm going to kind of put a hold on probably that thought process for right now and know that we're going to be able to revisit the recommendations work related to this very elegant data classes synthesis. The simpler and easier to consume an artifact is indicative of the level of lift behind the scenes. And I'm most appreciative to the small working group that has enabled us to iterate the spreadsheet work into this very clean, synthesized approach.
Hey, can I add one more question?
Sure, please.
Yeah, it's Jim Gerges. Hey, on the bottom, the metadata one, it almost looks like a footnote because it's at the bottom, but I see proprietary all across it. And when you look at it, it talks about this data class includes the pertinent information the different systems involved require to interoperate, like the endpoints. And when we say the information should be transparent, what kind of recommendation would we make given that it's proprietary? Like, is that the kind of info that makes these things operationally doable? You know, how big a deal is that the fact that so many of the details are proprietary, and what would be our recommendation?
And I feel like part of what we're trying to address within the Fire at Scale Task Force, ONC's sponsored sort of collaborative initiative of the public-private partnership, trying to really figure out what it's going to mean to scale the use of the FHIR standard across our country. I think they're looking specifically at that metadata area and may bring to us sort of the aspect related to the data about the data that needs to be in that wrapper and that information exchange so that computer systems can then interpret and understand the data which it's receiving in the payload and use it appropriately. We haven't really had the frameworks before related to more electronic data interchange, wanting to address the metadata aspects at more of a standardized level. But we are looking at that from a FAST perspective. And so I see Jocelyn's hand just popped up. I suspect that she'd like to add some commentary here.
So I think that there's another point in here, which is as the industry as a whole is moving more to service-oriented architecture and API-based infrastructure, I think this idea of the value of the investment we have in a lot of these existing mature standards is there. And I think you can see movements happening across the different standard bodies to really try and figure out how do we move from these big kitchen sink interactions to more you know, point-to-point API-based or on-demand inquiry response-based interactions. So I think this concept of having better and improved ways to be able to share and transport sort of all this investment is going to be really an incredibly important discussion as we move forward as an industry, well beyond sort of prior authorization. I think that Alex is right. ONC FAST is having a ton of discussions around it, but I do think that we're going to be able to call out that that discussion needs to expand beyond FAST and really across the universe of transaction sets that are in play in the market, you know, based on the hundreds of millions and probably billions of dollars of investment by all the players in the status quo. I'm going to get off my philosophical soapbox right now, though.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Josh, Jim, and team? Okay, without further ado, thank you so very much to your leadership, Jim and Josh. This has been really helpful, and certainly we're going to circle back with you and your team on the analysis efforts as we do need to address the gap areas to extend our recommendations work. And as we pivot to our next agenda item, you'll see that I've captured that note as I'm going to start sharing my screen now. To help us with the prior authorization recommendations brainstorming work that we've been doing. So hopefully everyone is able to see the guiding principles ideal state document. It's become very colorful. Content in purple reflects the notes from our straw man development work. We used orange to help tease out the two areas that we'd like to talk about today. You may recall from last week, I noted that the group had done some, the small working group had done some brainstorming related to different policy levers, but know that we have some robust considerations for the team today. Last week, I think that was just Friday, perhaps, the small working group met, and we were able to think through and the design for the future while solving the needs of today. So what I'm going to do is sort of set a context about what the 4 points are related to designing for the future, and then I'm going to walk through the straw man recommendations, and then I would ask that we would do a, at that point, then we'll take questions and hopefully iterate this content to the point where the task force is happy with that point, and then we can move on to the final area that we haven't tackled yet for recommendations related to prior authorization. In regards to design for the future while solving the needs of today, we really want to strive for dramatic improvement from which we will learn and apply to the more complex scenarios. Our approach should be sensitive to all potential burden to drive adoption and obtain desired results. Should the floor be established, we're talking about standards floor, ensuring corresponding operating rules and regulatory rules allow for rapid standards development and evolution so as to not preclude innovation. So keep in mind, as I'm talking about this section today, the work is really some of these ideal statements really take into an account other portions of our guiding principles and ideal state considerations, such as this floor being established for national standards. As we know, under HIPAA, we've had a ceiling approach. And the final point is also related to operating rules, that they should continue to raise the foundational level of adoption while encouraging and supporting organizations raising the ceiling capabilities. With those four consideration points, the team came up with five recommendations. The first one is to establish a single national coordination function across administrative and clinical standards. This may involve syncing the authorities of the newly created CMS Office of Burden Reduction along with the HHS's Office of National Coordinator. Two, establish a unified process for standards advancement for clinical and administrative data. This would permit organizations to innovate on administrative functions, as will now be permitted for clinical standards under the Standards Version Advancement Process, affectionately referred to as SVAP. And this SVAP kicks in and can be applied once a standard has been formally adopted. Third, advance the framework of interoperability standards advisory to aid convergence efforts and advancing standards versions. We've included, by way of reference, a little bit about the ontology of the standards of the ISA for those who may not be familiar with it. We thought it might be helpful to reference that it's got the vocabulary, the semantics level, that includes terminology standards, et cetera. We've got the content structure standards and implementation specifications, the syntax. And the third part is the standards and implementation specifications for services, the infrastructure components deployed and used to address specific interoperability needs. Fourth recommendation is to align national frameworks to a single standards platform inclusive of content specification, terminology, and transport. For instance, FHIR is a content standard and terminology addressed by NLM-established crosswalks. We went on to further share that clinical encounters capture data that feeds administrative and other functions downstream. Therefore, we need one set of standards that support current and emerging use cases, and there should not be an artificial separation between clinical and administrative standards. The standard should be friendly to innovators in licensing and acquisition aspects. In other words, for all standards, both content, structure, and transport aspects, and terminology, we need to address at a nationwide level the ability to establish an appropriate, sustainable process while providing open content licenses for all to use to enable, support interoperability, and reduce burden. Fifth, to establish a lightweight and feasible exception process to achieve the spirit of, I probably should elaborate on this citation, 45 CFR 162.940, which is the exception process for national standards, which is currently viewed as burdensome for innovation and requires a level of orchestration that leads to a non-starter. We had a couple other areas we might like to explore, but I thought at this point I'd open it up for questions about these recommendations and to see if there's any concerns with them, if we need to wordsmith them, or we're good to go. Did you see a hand raised, Anil?
Yeah, and I'm regarding point B that's on the screen right now, and I'm probably over reading this or maybe not understanding, but how is that different in terms of establishing a unified process, different than the USCDI and the work that we've discussed previously in this in the broader committee? Am I mixing up stuff, or we're talking about advancing standards?
Yeah, what I think we're trying to do is that right now we have the SVAP, the Standards Versions Advancement Process, which is the way that ONC can advance their health IT standards. So once they put and this is just from the new interoperability rules. So once they've have formally adopted and incorporated by reference a standard, then they have the ability to use their other tools in their toolbox to build on that foundational adopted standard and give an easier glide path to a newer version. Whereas we don't have that same functionality today for administrative data. And before I go any further, I saw Arian's hand come up, and I was wondering if you were looking to also help me answer this question, Arian.
Absolutely. So, I think just for reference, I think what we're proposing is that administrative standards align with the same process that's used to update USCDI so that as we've, I think in the past, we saw administrative standards be a completely separate process, separate workflow, often implemented in completely separate IT systems. So you had a practice management system that implemented eligibility and claiming, or you had a HIS that implemented, the patient account and the financial side of the record. and you had an EHR. In the modern era, those systems are aligned. The workflows, as we've discussed, are aligned. There's a need for much more complex adjudication. And in areas like prior auth, we've really exposed the need to have a single harmonized set of records. So, you know, Anil, what you're saying is exactly right on. We're looking to align these two processes rather than the current state where they're separated.
Okay. All right. That helps tremendously. Thank you, guys.
Yep.
Well, thank you, because I realized we could strengthen the clarity of the second sentence, so I did modify it to start out with this aligns with and would permit to kind of give that clearer linkage. If you think we could strengthen it further, please let me know, Anil. Jocelyn, I see your hand up.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that is I do think when we think about USCDI, it really has been focused on clinical data and the work coming out of ONC and FHIR, I think, for the large part. And as we've brought the payer community and these administrative workflows into this world, and I'm sure others as well, the need to understand the maturity of resources available in that emerging standard, I think, is important, but also understanding that that data set itself probably needs more input from folks from the administrative side of the house. And so I've been really excited to see the progress ONC has been making in developing a process for us to mature and evolve USCDI in a meaningful way outside of sort of yearly updates or bi-yearly updates. So, but we're going to need people's brains and time to really make sure that we're doing that a thoughtful and a meaningful way when things are ready to be added.
So to that point, Jocelyn, you know, that really is getting more either towards needing to bolster the ISA recommendation, or possibly is there a new recommendation when you talk about this reality of the data model, the USCDI sort of aspects, there probably is a disconnect in aligning the administrative and clinical standards. Do we need to call that out more specifically, or do you think it's a natural part of this next recommendation about the ISA?
I think the crosswalk is at the heart of this, right, which is how are we making sure that people can walk from one standard to another standard, and that we're going to provide the ability to get to parity across those different data sets and data models and value sets that are used, and where we need to harmonize or where we see as an industry a need to evolve there. I think that those conversations will become more obvious. Right now, we're doing it manually over and over again across so many different organizations in ad hoc ways. And, you know, we could take a huge amount of lift and pain out if we actually allowed for those conversations to be happening at a national level across the standards organization.
Okay. Made a little bit of a tweak there related to the NLM for the National Library of Medicine crosswalking aspect, just to tie in and bring in that USCDI aspect. I didn't want to lose that point. So I was kind of hoping this discussion today might get a little, you know, people might really get jazzed up about these recommendations, either like, yes, we're causing change, or no, you guys have gone like off the deep end of the pool. So looking for some more feedback. Anil, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, I this is probably not that helpful of a comment, but I will say that, you know, I think somewhere in there, there's about an artificial separation between clinical and administrative data. But, you know, when you start thinking about this, about structure and function, the functions of clinical operations is different than administrative. And I don't know how to better represent that, but I think what we're saying is we want to harmonize it to make things significantly more efficient for the patient / member of a plan and not make it burdensome. I like that, but how do we also keep in mind that the administrative aspects of healthcare today are different? They have different, in some cases, regulatory aspects to them than the clinical. There's different, at least today, different latency when it comes to what's happening clinically, and especially in certain settings like in the intensive care unit, it wouldn't make sense to think about it administratively. I'm not suggesting any change, but it just struck me that there is it's not an unnecessary separation. It's a separation because that's the way our healthcare system is set up. And what we really are trying to do is, to the best we can, harmonize them so that we remove unnecessary burden from doing the right thing at the right time for the right person. And I'm not sure that's captured. It sounds like to me that what's currently written, it's like a technical issue. We have an unnecessary separation. It's not just a technical issue. It's a structure and function of how our healthcare is reimbursed and delivered.
I see several hands jumped up as you were wrapping up there. So I'm going to, because I suspect they want to chime in on your discussion. Say again, Anil. You broke up on me.
No, I was going to say, and if everyone disagrees with what I just said, then that's fine. We don't need to talk about it.
Okay. Well, let's first let me see if Rich or Jocelyn, did you have something specific to Anil? Rich?
Jocelyn? No, different question.
Okay, Jocelyn, were you on that?
I want to double down on what Anil just said. Having lived between both medical and pharmacy, and between clinical and medical in different roles, I think that how we code things based on payment versus permission is radically different. And I think to Anil's point, it's more about business process and purpose than it is about, you know, people are trying to do the right thing, and there's a level of precision because of the complexity that we've put into the market of how our system works that drives to those different vocabularies and knowledge bases. I think that calling out that reality that they are different universes and vocabularies that are used for very different business and patient care purposes, I think is actually really important for us to do, because I think we need to acknowledge it to then figure out how to better synthesize them. I love that point.
Okay, so I'm hearing it. I'm not readily coming to what I should do in this document determination.
Well,
so looking for a little bit of more guidance there for what people are thinking.
Well, how about this, Alex? Instead of saying an unnecessary separation, just say that there is a distinction, currently a distinction that is a byproduct of the differences in how administrative business functions of healthcare are different than clinical functions. And the goal is to harmonize the best we can while still respecting that there are differences. It's probably a lot more verbose what I just said than it needs to be, but the bottom line is to acknowledge it, acknowledge the differences instead of saying that it's unnecessary differences, and then say that the best guiding principle would be to bring those closer together while still respecting the differences. Does that help at all?
I think so.
And to make it more clear, you can say the differences in the business needs for administrative and clinical operations. Oh, well, that's fine too, I suppose. Yeah.
I'm not sure I captured all of that because I was going in one place and then I tried to adjust on the fly. Therefore, we need one set of standards that support current and emerging use cases while respecting the inherent differences in administrative, clinical data, business, and operational needs.
I would say inherent differences in the business needs for administrative and clinical operations that may dictate the need for data or something to that effect, tying back to data. That may dictate differences in data standards.
That may be impacted. Okay, but they're going to get there eventually. But I just, I know that if we don't get at least the thoughts captured here, it makes it a lot harder downstream for us. So thank you for bringing that back. I see Rich, his hand still up.
Yes, I found my mute button. Thank you.
Awesome.
Couple of comments. First, I think A and B talking about really aligning the regulatory process between.
Are you talking about, I'm sorry, high level A and B, not the ones I was just little ones, the big ones. These?
Correct. Capital A, capital
Thank you.
B. Aligning the federal regulatory process is probably one of the best long-term contributions that could come out of this task force. I think that's, you know, on a long-term basis, that harnesses the lessons we've learned from HIPAA and all the struggles we've learned on the clinical standards development side. So I'm really strongly in support of those. Second comment is I'm not clear in here where the hooks are to incorporate into our recommendations the some of the products we've been talking about in this meeting and in previous meetings at the task force. For instance, the data classes, and then a couple of weeks ago, the modeling. So I'm making an assumption and just looking to get that verified that those models will be incorporated into the recommendations of the report somehow.
I think you're spot on, and I think we also have to do the and we're planning to have some discussion next week, I believe, when Cheryl returns, related to the federal health architecture data model, possibly. So we're doing a little bit of work and. We're actually doing a lot of work in parallel right now, but I think that we know we need to incorporate the data classes team into the recommendations work, and I'll add the data model aspect as well, Rich.
Yeah, as well as the ideal state, some of the other things we've been working on. They're just not explicitly in here, but I'm positive we're not going to abandon that work. All right, next comment. I'm a little surprised that the recommendations don't really specify some sort of pilot project. Early in our conversations, we were talking about, you know, patients ordering or getting wheelchairs for patients, and I'm not necessarily objecting to that. I'm just wondering what happened to that concept, or is that fallen by the wayside, or is that an omission, or what happened to the concept of picking a pilot and moving toward the development of that particular pilot and then making that expandable and scalable as a concept across the wider body of prior auth. And then my final comment is that implicit in these recommendations, I'm seeing a lot of financial burden put on the providers, and particularly the small providers, in terms of better integrating their disparate IT systems. Somebody talked earlier about, you know, the billing system, the practice management system, the clinic EHR, and that type of thing. And I suspect that requiring that, recommending that happened is probably critical to success for automating prior authorization, but it's going to be a heavy lift for a lot of small providers, and we need to think about how we socialize that and trying to get across. Is that's going to be a challenge to come up with capital for the small businesses that need to more fully integrate their IT capabilities. That's it.
Robust feedback. Thank you so very much, Rich. First, the national piloting process is something we did have as an item to build out for a recommendation, ran out of time on Friday. So it is here. I think what we need to do is to build some language about what we think that needs to look like. So I can leave that placeholder. the next thing I think is this, that it, as we try to make the system better and we institute changes, there's going to be a ripple effect into the marketplace that will result in financial impacts. And when we're trying to remove burden, we may actually unintentionally create burden, if I could synthesize what you've just said. So I think that there's this idea of having some kind of a recommendation, I believe is where you were headed, to what we could do to sort of address the burden for providers. Did I hear correctly?
Yeah, mostly. Yeah, and while we're reducing the workflow burden, we are imposing a rather significant financial burden on the, particularly the small providers. I'm less concerned about large providers, integrated delivery services, and health plans because they have the wherewithal to take that stride. Small providers, I don't think, have that. So I think it's going to be important to socialize. I'm not saying we need to make a recommendation, but to socialize that implication of our recommendations, you know, and I guess the way to do that, and I'm probably going too far afield here, is to work with those organizations that have been supportive of this process, specifically I'm thinking of AMA, MGMA, and others.
Okay, I'll just put a placeholder for right now.
Yep,
how about
thanks.
That? You're welcome. Arian, see your hands up. Please take us away. What's your question?
Yeah, I just want to go back to the point about the differences. To some extent, you know, clearly there are different, it is a different business process and workflow process to document an encounter and to adjudicate a claim. I do think it is important acknowledging that to state that we were searching for harmonization. If we, and the history here is that to the extent that we just start from the reference point that they're different, we end up building duplicative processes. So, for example, we end up building processes where the same encounter has to be coded twice because, of course, administrative codes and clinical codes are different, as opposed to adopting a reference point that says, well, we want the clinical coding to drive administrative coding to the extent possible. Or, you know, of course we need to have a PA process separated from the clinical process because one's an administrative process and the other's a clinical process. So, I think this language gets close. I think this language does get close. I think we need to flip the frame on they're different, so therefore they're different to the actual clinical encounter is the same in and one drives a clinical workflow and the other drives an administrative workflow. The workflows are different, but the actual stuff that happens to the patient is the same in and is really the ground truth for both these processes.
Yeah, so as I, you know, you could really flip it everything on its head if we somehow made a recommendation to say modernize administrative data needs. And make it all based upon clinical. I mean, that would be like, you know, one of the things we talked about in the small group is how this time's going to be different and calling out what we think is right. And if we do that, we can work towards that.
Correct.
And figure out how to get there. So are you really calling out this dynamic of administrative started in one camp for a set of purposes, clinical was in another purpose, those are now trying to come together, and do we have a foundational philosophical approach that has to be redone?
That's right. I think that's exactly right. And the workflows, the use of the data are absolutely, and for good reason, different. Is a different process to adjudicate a claim than to document a record for clinical decision making, but the ground truth of the encounter, the ground truth of what happened to the patient, what the physician did, what the staff did, is the same ground truth. And it, sort of starting from that perspective is a really important frame. And I like the way that you put that of moving towards a more integrated process.
Well, I'm trying to. How do other people feel about this whole idea that, you know, we have the source of truth is, you know, the doctor and the patient, and that what's captured there, and then all of these, you know, we do have this idea of record once and reuse. And so, if we're going to record once, how do we get those downstream processes? Like, I go to the doctor. I now need my, I have insurance through my employer or through my own acquisition to help me cover the expenses of my care, and more of that's moving towards a value-based care environment, but there's still fee-for-service pretty much out there, folks. And so what does this mean as far as recommendations for if we move forward? I mean, do people agree that we should push the envelope here?
And I guess just one meta comment before that is that I think we've exposed in EPA, I think we've exposed in DME, I think value-based care is another really good proof point. The world is pushing us towards that perspective. The environment, the ecosystem's pushing us towards that perspective. And in many cases, we're trying to solve problems from the perspective of these being very different processes with different standards. And that creates some of the burden that we're talking about.
Anil.
Yeah, no, I was going to. Yeah, can you hear me okay?
I can.
I was just going to second what Arian was saying about the various models, business models between healthcare providers and administrative health plans, for example, are forcing this direction, like in population health. But I do think it's worth us trying to understand what are the unintended consequences. We typically think about the administrative data, and again, just thinking about the minimum data needed to carry on a business transaction kind of flies in the face sometimes of trying to create a world where any clinical data can be used I'm not suggesting that Arian said this, but that any and all clinical data and any and all administrative need to be harmonized into a single thing. So I think the patient may not see it that way, and perhaps even the providers. This idea that that in order for an administrative business transaction, we should use the minimal information needed to get that business transaction done should be a guiding principle for how we think about this. I'm not suggesting that the standards don't need to be harmonized, but I don't think we should use the standards to force together business practices that by design should be in some cases distinct. And I'm not suggesting Arian said that. I think the workflow comment he made it clear that the workflows are different. It's just that it could be misinterpreted.
Got it. If I can just, and sorry for going out of process, mm-hmm. If I can just clarify what you're saying is your concern would be that if we say the standards and the workflows need to be harmonized, we're unintentionally thought of as saying the data needs to 100% flow across all settings. And it's important to state the context that because the business needs are different, and because we've got a minimum necessary requirement that, you know, we're not sending the HIV test to adjudicate the toenail fungus claim.
Yes, it's too easy. Once all the data is where it needs to be, it's too easy to hit the button and say, I'll send everything, instead of carefully picking through what needs to be sent. And sometimes having differences in transport mechanisms or standards forces that exercise to be done. And in the absence of that exercise, it's too easy to share everything.
Okay. And shout out to the transcriber who transcribed send the HIV test to adjudicate the toenail fungus claim perfectly.
Thank you. So I'm really curious to hear from others. I mean, there's this idea of, you know, standardization versus, you know, you can have plenty of standards and you can crosswalk them till the cows come home. There's still burden in all of that. how far do we really want to push the envelope, folks?
Hey, Alex, it's Jocelyn. I've walked away from my computer, so I can't raise my hand. I've been doing product development for, I don't know, 25, 30 years, building stuff. And I think that incremental progress is important. And I think forcing the hard discussions to the right level to be dealt with is what we need to focus on. Because these are really big topics that are going to require thoughtful application of regulation, consensus, and agreement with folks that haven't typically been talking to each other. And I think that we need to pave a path forward and know that it's going to get incrementally better. But I think that, you know, the point, and I don't know if it was Rich or Anil that brought it up initially, the unintentional consequence of adding additional burden without any relief, I think is something we're going to need to be very mindful of in our recommendations. I think that as a humankind, not as an industry, this is not a healthcare problem, I've worked in other industries, we need to understand the cost of new and maintaining current. And that there has to be dual, and there has to be ways to get to new. And if we try and plan something that doesn't acknowledge that, we end up in the world we're in right now with trying to upgrade, you know, X12, that it's this multi-year effort with, you know, tons of investment because everybody has to go at once. I think we'd all agree that you know, being able to make that incremental progress for the thought leaders and then nudging people behind while having all the hard conversations is the way that we need to go.
Thank you, Jocelyn. Rich?
Yeah, to answer Alex's question, we really need to push this envelope pretty hard and far. And a couple of reasons are one, the ability of the industry as it now exists, as best I can understand from the various presentations we've had over the last couple of months. Industry is not capable of doing that now without major investment in its systems integrations. Second reason, equally important, is when we look back at our, you know, the models we're thinking of, we're building in from greenfield a role for the patient. And we've got to define that. And that entire link to the patient has to be built from scratch, both by the providers and the payers. That's something that doesn't exist now. In the history, probably a bit more so for the administrative standards, has always been a business-to-business mentality, slightly less so on the clinical standards. But in both worlds, really, really active and meaningful patient engagement doesn't exist yet. So in order to build that into the real world, we are really going to have to push the envelope here. Thanks.
So I think Rich is giving us sage advice that we need to push the envelope here. And some of what is in this section is much more of the broader intersection of clinical and administrative data discussion, but it's very germane to this prior authorization conversation. And is anybody uncomfortable so far with the fact that we've brought forward straw man recommendations that are intended to turn things upside down a little bit and really look towards the future that we think is right, and recognizing that we're going to have to manage be effective in managing the change along the way to minimize burden, or to come up with some way that enables us to rip the duct tape off quickly and make the pivot. are we giving heartburn to anybody in the task force?
Isn't that why we're here, Alex?
I think it is, but I really want to make just make sure that we're all on the same page, so that when we start, you know, you start to get recommendations translating into narrative in a report that you're going to read, I don't want any surprises downstream. So thank you, Andy, for sharing your no heartburn, and Denise giving us a check mark that we're on the right path. That's important. You know, it's so with that said, are there any other thoughts that people are having about to I'm sorry, Denise, do you want me to call on you, or are you just giving us a thumbs up?
Yes. No, I just wanted to echo Rich's comments related to the patient. You know, as I think about, that is a place where we are going to have to really push the envelope, because as I think about the way things exist today, like if the patient wants to get a status on their PA, it usually involves a phone call, or they have to log in to their member portal for their health plan. I mean, I can say personally as a patient, I wish I only had to interact with my provider organization and get the answer. Truthfully, I mean, I should be able to check on the status of my PA through my provider in a seamless fashion, and not have to go over to the health plan to find out what's going on with my PA. And as I was thinking about this, and when you think about other industries, if you think about ordering a package, ordering something on Amazon, you're able to track your order from the time you place it all the way till the time it's delivered at your door. And we need to have the same thing as patients in the PA process.
So like my ability to check my Amazon order, I can simply get on any time, day or night that I want to, and see exactly where it is. That kind of ability to self-service.
And when it's with the shipper, you know what city it's in, each step it takes along the way.
Who to call?
To the point where it's at your door.
Well, but ironically, I'll tell you, even that process isn't ideal, because I was supposed to have a shipment delivered Friday and I'm still waiting for it. They're letting me come back for a refund if it still doesn't get here today. So nothing is perfect, but at least I have transparency and my expectations are being managed because I have information at my fingertips.
But if you think about the patient being in the doctor's office and a PA needs to be done, the patient shouldn't have to then go to the health plan to find out what's going on. I just think that it needs to be a seamless flow for the patient. So the point Rich was making about really pushing the envelope when it comes to the patient interaction in this process, because as we saw in the table earlier, that it was blank when it came to standards and data and what that interaction looks like for the patient, particularly around status. And patient-generated data. So I'm just reinforcing what and agreeing with what he has said.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It is officially time for our public comment. I do know that Andy's been giving us some comment in the chat box, and Jocelyn has her hand up, and I will come back to those in a moment. But without further ado, we'd like to see the public comment slide. Thank you. And we also have Lauren that's placed the comments in the box. So, Lauren, I think this is turned over to you.
Yeah. Operator, can we open the line?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. We will pause to poll for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Well, thank you so very much. So, Andy, I believe you're only able to communicate via the chat box. What I am inferring from what I'm seeing so far is that we should take out B and leave C because it's not as subjective. Yes. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and do that. Because I think you're right, because part of what you were getting there was our stream of thinking. So I think it is much cleaner. And then I'm going to say, Jocelyn, you were next in the queue.
So I think Denise's comments, I think, really drove home something we've experienced with electronic prior auth, right? So we've had a standard in the market for 8 or 9 years. When we first brought that standard live, we had knockdown, drag-out arguments about the provider being the only one to own and control that prior authorization process. And then we saw massive adoption with retrospective prior authorizations, as you heard CoverMyMeds and Surescripts talk about, because the pharmacist essentially was driving the PA process. So in the last 2 years, we've added the ability for the pharmacist to be a role and player to submit prior authorizations and acknowledge their role in this process. But as part of that, we actually created a communication transaction that literally is to allow people to monitor the status of where the PA is being done, who's doing it, so the different parties don't create duplicate prior authorizations. And that transparency, that ability via API to understand, we always kind of affectionately refer to it as the who's on first, I think is incredibly important because, you know, to Alex's point with your Amazon delivery, your expectations are being managed because you know that when there's delay and you have the ability to go and check it, but it also has the ability to be able to update you asynchronously when status changes or to change the course, right? Like your refund. And we get frustrated as consumers when we can't get that level of service with a delivery coming to our house, you know, for a book, or, you know, some sort of a consumable device, right? But we completely tolerate it when it comes to life-saving and life-altering medications, procedures, and equipment that we need to live our lives from a healthcare perspective. So I think raising the bar to make sure that that patient can always know where things are from a status perspective is incredibly important.
I wouldn't say we tolerate it. I think we're helpless. not toleration, helplessness.
I will totally take that edit.
So I've tried to also make sure that we're getting some of this aspect of the patient involvement, and I think that's more in the transparency or at the patient at the center. So I want to do a cross check into those areas, but I'm not sure that it fits in. I'm not sure to what degree we have a recommendation at this point for this section. But I don't want to be short-sighted, Denise. Is there anything that you maybe you're looking for a little bit more?
No, it probably needs to be in the other section, but I just wanted to make the point.
Well, I think it's good. We'll follow up and make sure that it's in that other section. So thank you for confirming that. Anil, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I think, you know, as we move towards that integrated data model and sharing becomes easier and perhaps even the norm for all the purposes we've been talking about and provide some of that transparency, we have to make sure that policy is aligned to that. And, like, you know, just I know we talked about privacy and security in prior meetings, but just think about trust. So if as a clinician, if I'm with my patient and we're putting together a reason for why they might need a DME, is the plan or payer allowed to use that information for other purposes, or can they only use it for this purpose, and so on. So I think I'm trying to think about going beyond the technical standards and thinking about implementation. Rich brought up the cost of IT systems that small group practices might have to bear, but there's also other policy implications where if we're not fully aligned, then we'll have some very elegant recommendations around standards, around an integrated data model perhaps, but very little to show in terms of how we're going to foster that adoption for widespread use. So not
and
sure.
And Emil, I think this is good. I was thinking about what you were saying, I was wondering if I was also seeing Andy's chat. I'm thinking about this integrated data model kind of aspect and sort of where we're going, if that's a perfect setup for our next steps. So if we could flip over to that slide deck, because we're coming to the end of our time here today. And in our, we had no further public comments. Thank you for letting us know that. One of the things that we're going to be doing on next week's call, I believe, is that there's going to be some discussion. I think at some point we were going to talk a little bit about some data models and the alignment with the federal health model, but I think we're going to do that when Cheryl gets back. And I thought that was on our agenda for next week. We may have taken it off temporarily. But I think to the point here at the end of the discussion between Emil and Andy, I think we really do need to add that to our discussion. So Michael, Witty, if you can help us keep that in mind as we do our debrief and plan for the next call, I do think that there's a sort of linking the data classes conversation with the data modeling sort of exploration with what does it really mean to look at an integrated data model or an interoperable data model, as Andy is calling it. I think we need to have some conversation around that. So I want to cue that up because I don't want to shortchange that just because we're at the end of the call. For our next steps, we're actively working on volunteer recruitment, and I thank those who have already accepted my invitation to play within the report writing effort. We believe that we will be able to synthesize or transform, as I noted earlier, the work that has been done by a variety of small groups and brought back for discussion here with the task force. We'll transform those and start to put it into a cleaner status so that we can then start to compile a report. We're working closely with Lauren Ritchie and team to understand sort of the benchmark to which we write and helping us with crafting recommendations in a way that will fit with the overarching database and also the norms of the HITACH report structures. So we've been working on that a fair bit offline. Stay tuned. We will be bringing back some additional frameworks for everyone as we dot our I's and cross our T's on our thinking. We are looking to move next week from discussing the prior authorization example to the broader discussion of integration. So let's just hold on to our hats for a little bit for that one. We're also thinking through what that might look like. And we may not do it next week. We may kick it off the following week. So a little bit of fluidity in our agenda topics. But clearly for the next month, we are going to be not only continuing our pivot to the larger intersection of clinical and administrative data, but we're also going to be cleaning up and parallel writing effort. We have a lot to accomplish before we are expected to deliver an update and draft report on September 9th to the task force. So I knew that there was an integrated federal data model discussion in our timeline, and here it is, July 21st. So thank you for advancing us to that slide. So I think we'll kick off with that next time and then give you an update on the writing report effort and any time remaining, we will pivot to the convergence conversation. So without further ado, I'm going to thank everybody for their time and their input today. We look forward to having you back next week, July 21st at 3 o'clock. On that note, have a great rest of your day, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everyone.